Hey everyone, welcome back to the new season of What We Had. We are now in our season 3 and we have a great list of amazing guests lined up for the season. So to begin with, our first guest for the season is Neha Mishra. She is a behavioral master trainer. With 13 years of experience in business communication and leadership, training institutions and corporates, she shares her plethora of knowledge with us. She is passionate about facilitating transformative participant experiences where they feel accomplished, confident, and proud of their achievements, where they acknowledge their fears and are committed to overcome them by being compassionate towards themselves and their surroundings. In this episode, she walks us through some of her consulting sessions and share some proven techniques to sustain your personal or professional performance. So let's tune into our conversation and learn more from Neha. So today we have Neha Mishra with us, and we are going to have an interesting conversation to know about her journey and how she has helped multiple entrepreneurs and organizations upskill and become better leaders.
To begin, I see that in your profile you have a thing called Neha Talks. Like, can you tell us more about what Neha Talks is?
I think Neha Talks is my mother's dream because she always wanted me to keep talking, and then she literally enjoyed the whole thing. So I mean, that's on a lighter note, but Neha Talks is more of a venture where, you know, I felt that we need to bring across what's in our heart, what's in our mind. We need to be a little more vocal about our key learnings and share it with people. So when I started Neha Talks, it was more on a personal agenda, wherein I wanted to share more of my learnings, my failure stories more than success stories, because when I was failing at certain stages of my life, there was mostly a lot of pressure because I would always feel, how would others think? And that also comes from me being the eldest in my huge family. So that pressure of being the right person, doing the right thing, going the right way, being a motivation and so on and so forth, while it has great perks, it also comes with a lot of pressure. So that's where it started, wherein I wanted to share more of my personal experiences. But then slowly and eventually it graduated to a place wherein not just me, but I had a lot of other people who would come, join hands, collaborate and talk about their learnings. And that's how my network grew to network of, trainers and leadership coaches and, further invest into my own development. And so on and so forth. It became more of a learning and development enterprise, more of a mentoring enterprise, more of coaching, wherein it was always like extending a helping hand. And then of course, taking it to a level of institutions and corporates and so on and so forth. So Neha Talks is all about learning and development, sharing success stories and more of failure stories.
I also believe you train organizations under Epinomy Consulting, is that correct?
That's right. So Epinomy Consulting is a company which is into behavioral, technical and functional trainings. I work with immense talent from across India, and we also have some coaches and trainers from outside, other parts of the world, who come together, who extend their services to organizations to train their middle level managers, junior people, I mean, more of inductions and freshers, and also senior leadership, so yes, I am one of the instrumental parts of the organization, and I try to add value as much as I can.
Yeah, you talked about like technical and leadership skills. So like, what kind of skills do you train your clientele for, like your customers essentially?
Right. So as under the umbrella of Epinomy Consulting, behavioral, functional, and technical skills. So I work very closely. I lead the team, the behavioral training team, because we identify that it always is the other way around. More than training people on technical skills, which in a way is more factual and logical, and you can do that. Training them on behavioral skill is a big deal, because that's where you try to shift the mindset. That's where you try to tweak, and not just tweak, maybe a lot more than that. You try to change the way they have been conditioned since their childhood. So under behavioral trainings, we do a lot of things in the lines of emotional intelligence, how to manage time, how to change habits, how to be more, how to think towards self-development, how to love yourself, how to, regret less and live more, so on and so forth. So honestly, there's a huge plethora of trainings that we do under behavioral stream and under technical, of course, related to new software developments or whichever technical stream we are training. It's like an ocean of topics that we cover over there.
Yeah, that's super fascinating. I think emotional intelligence is so important these days. Understanding everyone is working with a team essentially, and you need to know how to be a part of the team if you have, and for that you need a higher emotional intelligence. Do you have any specific strategies that you, or methods that you have that help people increase their emotional intelligence?
You were talking to me about the methods that we use in emotional intelligence, right? So I think more than the methods, I'll just try to tell you the approach, because methods will be going too deep into it. And, that may also get a little boring for that matter, So I'll just answer it from the top. So, like you rightly said, that emotional intelligence is most important for when you're working in teams, when you're working in your own silo, whatever, or even in your families for that matter. So I think what I add value with respect to emotional intelligence is helping people understand how to separate facts from feelings. And when you are able to guide them in the direction that, revisit your thoughts, revisiting your thoughts, being able to having an intelligence to be able to separate feelings and facts from your thoughts, to be able to understand how to, how to play or stop the record that's already playing in your mind, and how to structure your thoughts towards more of a solution, more of a problem-solving perspective. That entire process is emotional intelligence. So, it doesn't happen over 2 hours or a 4-hour training. It happens when you put the seed put the seed in someone's mind, and then they start coming across those situations. And that is the time when actually you need a coach or a mentor who you can sound off the idea and you can say, this is what I went through. Then the entire discussion builds up. So that's the process to develop emotional intelligence. However, we do a lot of trainings. We do a lot of 2-day training programs on emotional intelligence. And that also helps, because group trainings gives you an environment to discuss, sound off your ideas, come across different ideologies, different thought process. But at the same time, I always suggest that if you want to train yourself more on emotional intelligence, you should have a coach along with whom you are living those moments that you come across.
Yeah, that's brilliant. So you talked about coach, and you talked about how you need to separate your facts from your emotions, right? That's what emotional intelligence means. And I think being mindful about it, meditating, it helps a lot in that process. And then, as you said, having coach, do you have any other methods that people can pursue, or at least start with before they hire you, obviously, as a coach, but what's the first stepping stone to start that process? Because, and I'm again being selfish, I have a lot of anger problems. So a lot of times I get angry, right? And then because of that anger, I'm not looking at facts. I'm just working through that emotion? So like, what could be a starting point?
So the first and foremost, and I'll come back to that meditation point, because I have a little different opinion on that bit. I'll come back to that. But I think knowing your purpose, which is, again, not easy. So first of all, Tapan, I mean, you know, I want to acknowledge the fact that anybody that goes through emotional ups and downs, or emotional waves in their lives, it's not easy to be able to come out of that. It's a process. And more than a process, it's practice that you put into process. So the first step, if I have to call it, is knowing your purpose, knowing why are you seeking what you're seeking. So for example, if repeatedly you have anger issues, to be able to understand, let's not try to solve problem of that particular situation. Let's try to first understand, ask yourself enough questions. And like I said, there's a structured approach to it, which is too detailed. I mean, I cannot get into too much at this point in time. But to be able to understand that, why is that pattern repeating in your life? What is that void that you're trying to fill in through that anger which you're showcasing, or which you are exhibiting, you know? So once you understand more about yourself, that's when you develop an ability to be able to understand your emotions. So first is knowing yourself. And that comes when you are in the hands of a coach, and the coach is asking you right questions and navigating you through your own answers and follow-up questions and so on and so forth. Talking about quickly about meditation, I feel, you know, it's an overhyped concept that to become more aware and to become emotionally intelligent, you need to literally sit down and meditate. I think I love the concept of meditation, but I think if you start understanding how can you meditate while we are talking. So, for example, we both are talking. There's meditation in this as well. The meditative part here is the focus part, that you and I are very clear what we need to answer, what we need to, what are we aiming at, what's our purpose. That's meditation. So the moment you funnel it to a place where you know what's your purpose in whatever you are doing, you're dancing, you're with friends, you are in an adventure sport, whatever it is, that's meditative. So yeah, living in the moment, you may call it, knowing what's that moment, why are you in that moment. And often I call a technique of, you know, 5 W's and 1 H, which is what, when, why, who, where, and how. So if you literally know all these parts, then you are always, you can be emotionally intelligent in whatever you do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So firstly, on behalf of young entrepreneurs who are setting out there and working with different teams, they have a feeling of imposter syndrome when they are pitching to a bigger client or talking to a team which is a large scale company. How would they be able to work above this bias and put themselves out there?
Right. See, imposter syndrome comes from the, again, it's a conditioned, you know, it comes very strongly from conditioning that you have gone through. Constant feeling of I'm not good enough. This is not my best performance. My peers are better than me. Constant feeling of these, basically, these attributes determine your underconfidence, or at the same time, your ambition to be the best. And your best is, again, no one defines what's your best. You define it. And you keep the bar so high that, you know, you're not able to, I mean, different people face different experiences, right? So I think, I mean, I'm surprised also. At the same time, I'm surprised because youngsters, what you're talking about, people like you are the ones who also promote. And I'm quite happy to see you, the youngsters, promoting the fact that don't take stress. Whatever you are the best version of yourself, so on and so forth. So I think living what you walking the talk, or believing in what you're saying is more important. At the end of the day, honestly, there is no benchmarking. There is no parameter. I mean, till the time, I would say, if you have your goals clear, if you know what's being expected from you in an organization, when you are presenting to your seniors or you are in a setup like that. If you clearly know what's expected of you, then you can approach it and you can give your best shot. But if you ignore that part and if you start putting your own benchmarks on top of it more than what's expected of you, you know, in the pursuit of being the best and pursuit of doing better, then it may have those side effects like imposter syndrome, like you said. But again, Iloni, for certain people, this works as an advantage. For certain people, raising the bar high really helps them to perform better. So again, knowing yourself, that who are you? What's your, what's your elasticity? And then moving around it is better. And I think at the same time, you need to practice a lot of self-love, self-praise, be with the company that appreciates the work that you do. If you have voids of appreciation and constant pressure, thresholds, then you may end up in imposter syndrome. So yeah, be watchful, be mindful.
I just want to know, like, are there tips or like methods that you would would journaling or something like that be a option for entrepreneurs to actually practice on an everyday basis, which would help them kind of build more self-love? Because I would say being an entrepreneur, you don't have a lot of seniors to kind of appreciate you out there. It's more about you having your own self-talk most of the time, telling yourself whether it's good, bad, or the situation's worthy. So are there like few methods or like more practical approaches that you can practice on a daily basis?
Right. I think it starts with goal setting. It's the very first step is identifying what is your goal, breaking it down. You know, Ken Blanchard has written a book called his 1 Minute Manager. And in this 1 Minute Manager, he talks about how can you break your complex goals into much smaller piecemeal so that you understand what are your milestones. And then whenever you achieve a milestone, you celebrate that milestone. So if you want to ask me the steps, I think the very first would be to identify what is that bigger goal which you want to achieve. Start breaking it down and break it down to a level when you say, isse zyada, I cannot break it down. This is it. I cannot break it down further than this. Once you reach that level, then you put timelines to it. So the techniques of time management comes in place, wherein you understand, okay, for X milestone or for X goal, how much time will I take? What are the what are the additional arms and ammunition that I need to achieve this? What will I do when I achieve it? Who are going to be my go-to people when I achieve it? And share it with them. See, it's a process, the beautiful process. Involve others. So, in the business, in entrepreneurship, have those advisors in place, have those mentor board in place, which you can sound off an idea, share these things. And once you achieve that milestone, you celebrate with all of them together. And when you start practicing these small success stories, that's when you will develop more love for yourself. Nobody else is going to express that, oh, wow, you did a great job. Nobody else is going to do. You have to say, guys, I did a great job. I achieved this milestone. Hence, I want to celebrate with you. And you see, Iloni, people will start congratulating you and telling you how lovely you are and how goal-oriented you are and all those great things that you've been willing to listen to. But you need to start that on your own.
Wow, that's definitely something I can start implementing right away. And I think it will definitely help a lot of entrepreneurs as well.
Yeah, I just wanted to shift gears a little bit and understand. So we all three of us and most of our audience have been a product of, the Indian educational system where we are taught a set of subjects, right? What do you think is missing in terms of, that is required to be a good leader or to get those soft skills necessary for the industry?
Right. I think collaboration over competence is missing major. We're always taught how can we, how to be better than the other person. And rarely we are taught how can we build things together. Most of the times, let's take the simplest example. When we are given projects, they are rarely group projects. Or even if they are group projects, it's a group of it's a group of two or three, you know, but we should be exposed more to collaborative exercises, experiential exercises, wherein we are taken to, taken to a location. And then, for example, leadership, you can never teach leadership in a classroom. You can never learn leadership being a class rep or a class monitor. That's not the only, a lot of times I interview young graduates and I ask them, you know, you've written leadership skill in your resume. Can you give me one instance where you showcased your leadership skill? And they start telling me they feel they are leaders because they were the class reps or they have led the class. And then once I start dwelling into the subject, then they say that, our work was only to take attendance and passing. Basically, they were mediators and nothing else. So that's not their flaw. It's because that's what we've been fed. So I think as an education system, we need to have more experiential exercises, take the students more to, why wait till they reach graduation? Take them early to organizations, to various different business houses, and let them experience, let them get a grasp of things. Don't feed them with too much technical knowledge, which I see a lot happening. The other thing I feel, which is also related to competence, is stress. So we are not taught how to handle stress. We're not told what is mental health is something which is now a lot of schools are adopting, but again, very theoretically. So, teachers are telling mental health, but they're saying, why can't you understand this concept? It's so basic. And they're talking about mental health and look at the attitude. So I think, it's a very vicious cycle, because do we have enough trained faculties, trained teachers who will talk about these subjects? Do we have enough leaders as faculties who will talk about leadership? So on and so forth. So I think, more practical understanding, competence, collaboration over competence, and stress management needs to be taught more.
Completely resonate. I wish I was taught, stress management and more about mental health. Right now we have to deal with, it's like building a plane while we're falling down, right? We're handling and learning, we're getting the stress and also have to learn how to deal with it.
I totally get you. I sail in the same boat.
Absolutely. So, having trained so many people transition from their mid-career to a leadership position, what has been your three key learnings that you've seen has helped most people, and how have they been able to implement it?
Great. I think number one is ability to unlearn. Is one of the key learnings, which again is a most difficult phenomena when you reach your mid-career level, when you are 8 years, 9 years, 10 years of experience, and now you want to switch career, transition, or move forward, whatever. So unlearning, that's one, important. There are techniques for it. Again, you need to surrender, so on and so forth. Second is, I think, agility or adapt. Or a sub-part of it you can also call as adaptability, to be able to think on your feet, to be able to move out of your comfort zone, try new things, being able to take an initiative for something that you've never done and being ready to fail, accepting failure. That's something which, again, mid-level, when you move from mid-career to senior, gets very difficult because there's fear attached to it. So the third most important, I feel, is redefining yourself, or rediscovering yourself. Because, when I ask people of 6, 8, 7, 10 years of experience and I say, okay, who are you? What's your brand? Talk to me about your unique brand positioning. What do you offer? What do people remember you as? The moment I say these things, it gets very difficult for them to put it into words. They may have a feeling, but they're not able to resonate that feeling into the right words. They're not able to express that. And honestly, that leaves them really confused. That leaves them in question. So, and that's where your rediscovering journey begins. And I'm very fortunate to have certain coaches who have been able to overcome this whole process, who've rediscovered themselves. And when I say rediscover, it doesn't mean that tomorrow they leave their jobs, pack their bags and start a caravan and start moving around countries. That's not what I'm saying. But, you know, doing things differently, projecting yourself differently is very important, especially a lot of times when you're working in one organization for more than 5 years. People have already set a brand for yourself. They identify you as some person. And now when you want to transition, when you want to learn a new thing, exhibit certain new qualities about yourself, people are not ready for it because they start seeing it as, oh, usko kya ho gaya hai? Wo aise, now, why is he behaving weird? Or why is she now acting so funny? These are the kind of comments you will hear. So to be able to overcome all this, all these various things that you hear and still rediscover, position yourself is one of the third most important key learnings that I've seen.
I think especially the point of like not fearing the failure. And I think with the social pressure that we have, the social media presence and you putting yourself out there, kind of makes it even more difficult. And I think that's where a lot of people have been struggling to transition or to even like talk about their failures in the first place.
Absolutely. And that's a sad part because, you know, when you are failing, all you want to know is, I mean, it's a little sadistic statement probably, but when you are failing, you want to know who else is failing, you know? And sometimes that's a great motivation because you know that you're not alone. You know, there are others as well in the same boat.
Yeah.
You have company.
Very actually, like when I am doing well, I actually look at people who are like probably doing better to understand where they are and I can set my next goals. But when I'm not doing well or I've had a setback, to just make myself feel better, I actually look out for like people who are in the same space, and then it feels more empathetic. Then you are like, okay, I'm not the only one struggling and I can move forward from this.
Yeah. And I think that's where, again, being a little more mindful, you know, like Tapan was mentioning, being a little more mindful that you don't have to wait for that time when you're feeling sad or when you are, you have just faced a failure. You don't need to wait for that time. Read more of failure stories of these journals or case studies, and you know, it keeps you grounded.
Yeah, no worries. I was asking, like, is there something that someone who's listening to us can take to their supervisors to convince them that they need to hire like an outside, coaching facility to get them maybe like through seminars or through presentations to breed more leadership inside our organization?
Right. I think, you know, a lot of organizations are already doing that. They take help of external coaches. And this is especially for the segment wherein, when it comes to coaching and mentoring, there are two things which are very important. One is reliability, the trust that you develop in a coach. The second part is alignment of a vision. So there is a pro and a cons to it. The pro part of it is that when you have somebody external coming in, this person can really be confidential to you. You can put your feelings out there and you can really, you know, bounce off your ideas, and you know that the person is not judging. The cons part of it is if the coach is not aligned with the vision of your organization, then it can go the other way around as well. So I think first is to be able to tell your leaders that coaching can definitely help, and it lets you develop a culture of more trust in the organization. You're not keeping it too tight by giving only your organization's coaches to your people. That also tells that I don't trust you. I don't know what are you going to tell outside. I also want to keep my money to my own organization. I want to overutilize my own people. So to be able to convince them that what value will a coach bring onto the table, if you have this external person, that is an ability that people need to express and you know, they need to take right facts onto the table. But on the other aspect, I would say that there's no harm in having internal coaches as well. It basically means rather, I would say that you need to hire coaches to develop more coaches in your organization than coaching your people. So I would rather say that identify those 100 people in your organization who become coaches in your organization and then drill down that culture instead of having one coach or five coaches coaching your 500 people.
Just one thing, like piggybacking off Atit's question, like how can managers be good leaders, right? Just one point like that will help a manager become a good leader for people under that manager, right?
Okay. There's a lot of unlearning that needs to be done, Tapan, because the biggest problem is, and that's what I sense already, is people. So, you know, we talk about millennials. So when we talk about managers, we talk about millennials who are from a certain, you know, who fall in a certain age bracket. Now, people who come in their team is Generation Y, is like, you know, maybe you guys are Gen Y and, you know, younger lot. Now, when these managers, and I think that's again a vicious cycle. It has been happening forever, but now it's more prominent because now people are more aware. So when I joined the workforce, my prime objective, and this is what was fed to me, was to respect my manager, to have, to make sure that I don't offend my manager and my seniors more than putting my point across, more than raising a concern. So that was the foundation of my learning. Now I grow to become a manager 10 years later, and now I have a team, but I was the one who had exhibited these set of values when I was youngest in my team. So to unlearn and to transition, to understand that this is not how the Gen Y works. The Gen Y does not work for money. The Gen Y does not work for some random appreciation. They are a lot genuine. They have very less attention span. They are very focused. They know what they want to do. And I'm absolutely against these concepts which are negative about Gen Y, you know that what I mean. So I just feel that if the managers know who are they dealing with, what is their ambition, what is their goal in their life, then they will be able to be more mindful. They'll be able to be more towards collaboration. They'll be able to offer support more than being more directive. A lot of times servant leadership also works, wherein you're actually doing it. You're actually serving your own team members and making them feel that, you know, that's why you are there. So, which is very difficult for current new managers, you know. So, yeah, I feel there's a lot of things that they need to learn: emotional intelligence, stress management, team management, maintaining a fun balance, understanding goals, goal setting. Oh my God. Managers who come from my era, they would probably talk about 100 things and not even one meaningful stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, a lot of such gaps need to be filled.
I think the servant leadership part that you brought up, I think I have been, given this instance from one of my mentors, that leadership respect needs to be earned being a leader. You can't, at least with Gen Zs, you can't authorize respect. Like, they're not going to do that. They are going to only believe in you if they genuinely do.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Just calling off the culture of sirs and madams is not going to help. You need to actually exhibit that in everything that you do. So yeah, a lot of change is all, but I'm glad to see that a lot of change is already happening. Certain industries need to step up, but IT is already showing a lot of change, and there are good signs happening. I'm happy about the change that I see.
Awesome. I think we are through our podcast session, and it has been a brilliant recording. I think we have learned a lot individually as well, and I believe the content that we've put out there would help the audience as well.